Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very accomplished retailer from Dubai, but more than that, he's a friend of mine who we've been together from school and someone I have hold in very high regard, Ajay Dayal. Ajay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ashutosh. Great to be here.
Ajay is an MBA. He is, till recently, was the senior vice president of the Rivoli Group, Dubai. He's been in Dubai since 1993, a very, very experienced retailer. And more importantly, he writes regularly on retail. So Ajay, tell me a little bit about your early life and what led you to Dubai.
Well, serendipity, they say, as they say, is what got me to Dubai because there was no real plan. Mm-hmm. When somebody, one of the headhunters approached me, I came in 88 as an opportunity in the Middle East. I said, how did you get my resume? Because I haven't applied for Middle East. So he said, I don't know. We had it on our data bank. And so here we are. You want to see? So I said, where is it in the Middle East? And he said, Dubai. So I said, okay, I heard of Dubai, but where is Dubai? So I had to look it up on the map. And I went to Bombay and met with the owner of this company who had come looking for people, and we had a long chat. And that was it. He sort of said, when can you join? I didn't have a passport, so I said, okay, I'll come. I've got a passport, it's on the way. And then quickly went and tried to get the passport, and that's how it happened. So it wasn't a planned move, it was just something which probably was ordained or divine, or whatever you call it, and that's how I'm here.
And you must have been one of the early professionals in retail. In a market that just went through the roof as far as retail was concerned.
Yeah, in fact, when I joined the company, and I had joined a small company which was doing electronics and photography. And we had a chain of those film processing studios. But that was not very big a business. And after 3 years, I got this opportunity to join Rivoli at that time. And I joined them in 92. And at that time, we had about 9 or 10 stores. And today, the group has got 400 plus stores. Wow. But it was still very, very sort of nascent. And a lot of my work was to do with wholesale. And we were selling these watches to watch retailers in the souk, in the market. And to exporters who would come and buy from Dubai, which is one of the big sides of the business. But in 1997 or 8, when the ruble crashed, I think about 50 or 60% of my business, which I was handling, disappeared because the Russians stopped coming in and they were our biggest customers.
Right.
So that was the time when I went and spoke to our boss and said, what do I do? My business is gone. So he said, what do you want to do? I said, I'll start retailing mid-level watches, fashion watches. He said, but where are the brands? Said, we'll find them. And so then we started off a new chain of stores within the group called Our Choice. And had to do a global search all over the world and find brands, DKNY, Diesel, Dolce & Gabbana, that kind of stuff. But what was happening in terms of the retail revolution is that until then in Dubai, everybody was only buying from the souk. I mean, that was where we went and bought things, whether it was televisions, whether it was refrigerators, whether it was gold, whatever you wanted, watches, you had to go to the souk. And malls had just started coming in. And the Rivoli Group was one of the early innovators, and they started signing up in malls because we did have some good brands. And it's funny, I went to a number of my customers who were electronic retailers. And I said to them, why don't you go and put up a shop in the mall? They said, no. It's too expensive and other retailers will be there. We'll be all next to each other. How will we compete?
Right.
So I said, no, this is the future. You need to think about it. And I actually arranged a meeting between the three top guys. And I said, let's meet. Let's talk about it. And they all came. And we discussed it. And I said, they said, it's too expensive. I said, okay, you're three big retailers, the biggest guys in town.
Yeah.
Go to this mall this is the expansion happening. This is the talk to this guy and tell him, look, we are ready to come. Our margins are low. Let's do something. Give us some benefit and we'll come.
Correct.
No. This is not going to work. We will not be able to survive. And so they didn't. But lo and behold, 5 years later, all of them were in the malls.
Amazing.
Because the souk died, you know. Yeah. I mean, people stopped going to the souk.
I agree. I remember the first time I went to Dubai was in 85 on road to Europe. And my wife and I went to the souk only to look at those chains of gold hanging. I wanted to see so much gold in one's life, you know, coming from India. But I'd never seen it. So, yeah. So you're absolutely right. But, you know, again, Ajay, in from the mid-80s to today, the mall business has completely changed. And I've come to the article I was reading that you wrote recently. But over the last 30-odd years, what are the significant changes you've seen in mall retail?
Well, it's been a journey even for the retailers in Dubai. For them also, it's been a big learning process. And if you look at the quality of retail now compared to the quality of retail in the early malls, big sea change. Because this is now what we call modern retail. People have to really learn and keep standards. And the malls, of course, helped a lot in that because they insisted on certain standards. I mean, some of the malls here actually are quite anal about the standards that they need. They want to dictate everything, you know, like, you can't have a poster within 2 meters of the lease line. And you can't do this, you can't do that. The window has to be not more than 30% covered. The shop should be visible. Cash desk has to be within so many meters. All that kind of stuff, they sort of mandate. And people have had to follow. So a lot of change has happened. People have learned how to improve merchandising. People have learned how to improve displays. In the old days, I remember it was practically impossible to find visual merchandisers. Today, you know, you have millions of them floating around and they're all available. So a lot of these changes have happened. And also brands have begun to look at this market in a completely different way. I mean, I was reading some years ago that more than 50% of the brands of the world are represented in Dubai. And more are willing to come. So a lot of change had happened. But one of the changes that is interesting is that as time has passed, the whole idea of franchise stores has sort of cooled down a bit. Of course, what people used to do in the old days is go to New York or go to London or go to other countries and pitch for, even I've done it, I don't know how many pitches I've done, presenting Dubai as a market and presenting our strengths as a market. As a retailer. So they'd go there and pitch and grab brands. And the guys out there would say Dubai, I mean, I don't know where the hell this place is. Give it to him. You know, he's a local expert. He knows what he's talking about. But today, brands are actually trying to back away from that and say, no, we'll do it ourselves. I mean, I remember we went to Abercrombie and Fitch, I think in 2011 or 12, and we said we presented ourselves. I was working with another group then, not Rivoli, and we presented ourselves. We were a big group. We had retail stores, all that. We knew we were doing retailing of garments, and we sold our pitch to them. But they said no, you know, we know our business better than anybody else. We don't want to give it to anybody else. If you want to be our agent, could have a discussion. So he said, what does agent mean? Say, you have to find us the real estate, you have to do the recruitment for us, you have to do all the local legal stuff, license, all that, but the business is ours. You'll just get a fee. So that's a change in model now. I mean, the whole way that people are working has completely changed. And that is visible in terms of the shops. I mean, when you go into the shops, you can see such a difference in terms of quality.
More money is being put into the shops now, I guess.
Much more money. I mean, people don't bat an eyelid now to spend big amounts of money on displays or on creating the store.
Yeah.
Whereas earlier, people would be really cutting corners. Very so that's the thing.
Very true. You know, you recently wrote, and this is partly because of the COVID pandemic, you wrote about the need for mall owners to pivot and find alternative uses, because obviously, you know, customers like you and I are not entering malls so easily. What should the mall owners be looking at?
Well, this is a very difficult question for them. In principle, it's easy to say that, you know, you need to pivot, and they do need to pivot. But they have invested large amounts of money, sunk cost is there. And also, they have a completely different business model. So, I mean, now it really means that they have to change their way of thinking about the property, not about the business, but about the property. What do I do with this property?
Yeah.
How can I change the use of this property? In some cases, if the mall is already built and it's already a mall, then it's a question of redefining the positioning of the mall, finding new ways to get people to come in, and finding different kind of retailers, and maybe reducing the number of stores and changing the way the mall is operated.
Right.
But in case of properties which are still under development, maybe partially built or not built, it's time for them to start thinking, okay,
correct,
let's not do a mall anymore. Let's change it and let's use this property for something else.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe build a hospital here or make a university or make make something else. So, I mean, that mental shift needs to be done. And in Dubai, one good thing is that many malls are constantly thinking, you know, what can we do to innovate?
Right.
How can we change the way the mall is? But essentially, they're still talking retail. And the question that I asked in that article is, will retail be that big a thing in the future that it can justify so many malls, so many big malls in the market?
Correct, correct. Which then leads me to the next question. You know, how is e-commerce changing malls?
E-commerce is, well, in the current situation in COVID, e-commerce has gone through the roof.
Correct.
I've been talking to a lot of the big players, even people in Amazon or outside, and the sales have just doubled, tripled, and they're all doing very well. But they also know that this is temporary, in the sense it won't happen always.
Right.
As COVID goes down, the sale will come down to a lower level. But how it's changed people's perception and behavior is in terms of their way of looking at buying. You know, earlier, it used to be a question of going, trolling a mall, walking around, looking and seeing what is available. Now, the information is so upfront and available that you can just go straight to a shop which you want to and pick up the stuff which you already know is there or something similar to it. And pick it up and come. So the whole buying process is changing, and the way people behave in the mall is changing. The time they would spend in the mall is changing. So that's the biggest change. You know, for a developer, a mall operator, the first challenge is, how do you get people into the mall?
Correct.
How do I tell people about myself, and how do I get them in? For which he has a good collection of stores. He has his anchor stores, and he thinks about all the different segments he's trying to cater to, positioning that he wants to have. Am I going to be high-end mall, mid-end mall, low-end mall? If I'm a high-end mall, my anchor stores have to be high-end. If I'm mid-low level, so I might have a Bloomingdale's if I'm high-end, but if I'm mid-level, I might have a Debenhams.
Correct.
Or if I'm low-end, I might have a Landmark.
Yeah.
You know, so you decide where you want to be, and you attract people according to that, and then you complement those anchor stores with other stores which are more or less in similar positioning, and you don't try and break that, because you know that's how you're the kind of customer you're going to bring in. So first challenge is to get people into the mall, but the second challenge is to keep them in the mall. How much time can you get them to spend in the mall? Because the longer they're in the mall, the more they spend, the more your retailers are happy. The more your retailers are happy, the happier you are.
Correct.
Because the whole thing is a chain. So, you have food courts, you have places of entertainment, you have stuff, you have cinemas, you have things where you just grab them and you don't let them go.
Correct.
But today, with the e-commerce and with COVID, this is changing.
Very true. Very true. So one more question for you on malls, and then I move to the next part. We've all been talking about the so-called alphabet soup, Gen X, Gen Y, millennials, Gen Z. How are millennials now changing malls and retail?
Well, actually, the influence of millennials is getting less and influence of Gen Z is getting higher.
Right.
And this is a worldwide trend.
Yeah.
Because the millennials are also now getting into that stage where they are not that... they're becoming more, not yet middle-aged, but they're becoming more mature and they're becoming much less excited and innovative and all that. They're settling down. So, of course, the millennials have already created this kind of malls where, and they've been a driving force for the malls. But I think that it's changing now. It's the Gen Z which is really going to bring about the change. And their whole approach is much more digital, much more innovative, much less loyal. They're not that loyal. They may not be that brand conscious also, which millennials still had the residue of brand consciousness, which their parents and people like that had. So they're out there for the latest thing. They're out there for what is in trend. So they go and buy what they have seen on the social media. They go and buy stuff which is in trend at that time. They're not necessarily worried about going and buying a Hugo Boss or a LV or something like that. Their whole way of looking at buying is different. So I think the millennial influence is waning, and the Gen Z influence is gaining. And that's a big change that all the malls will have to think about.
Very interesting. So, Ajay, let me move to the second part of our chat, which is on second innings. We are all now at a stage in life where we are beginning to think of what do we want to do next. And I've often said that given today's health, our working life will probably equal to our life post 60. And again, I've often said that Indians particularly don't plan what they want to do after their work. Most friends I speak to say, I'll cross the bridge when I reach it. And when they reach it, they haven't planned. So as a business advisor who has embarked on second innings after a successful career, tell me what has been your experience in the journey and what are you looking forward to?
Well, there are two ways of looking at it. One, of course, is that now because you're on your own, you have more time. Whereas as long as you were working in the rat race, so to speak, you didn't have time for yourself. You didn't have time to really pursue things that you wanted to. So having more time now, there is an opportunity to spend time for yourself as well as to use the information, the knowledge, the experience that you have for the benefit of people who are in need of it. So this now is the time to try and find the balance between these two things. I mean, what is going to be an interesting change for us is to go and settle in India, as you know, in a kind of a rural setting. So trying to understand the rural culture and the way people are living in that place and trying to see how we can contribute in that setup. And but besides that, of course, there are so many opportunities that will come up, I'm sure. For maybe education, for organizations, for people who would like to use the kind of knowledge and experience that I have for this. So it's going to be a blend of both. I mean, it's not going to be like straight pursuit of either this or that, but we are definitely going to look at a blend.
And what are your thoughts on when should one start to think of life post 60? At what stage in one's life?
I think it would now the stage that I am at, I think if I should have started thinking about it maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
But in the hustle bustle of corporate life, you really don't have mental space for it. And that's the big issue.
Yeah.
But yes, that would have been the right time to start, slowly. You don't have to make a detailed plan, but it would have been a good thing to have done that.
Very interesting. Okay. So, Ajit, move to a few personal questions for you. The first question is that over the years, are there people who've had a strong influence on you? And if yes, what have you learned from them? And give me two examples.
I think one person who was very influential on me was my first, not he wasn't the first, but early bosses in Berger Paints. Mm-hmm. His name was Siddharth Mukherjee. And he was a regional head for Delhi and North.
Right.
And I was a branch manager, and I was reporting to him. But I really learned from him the value of hard work, the value of thinking, and his whole approach was so open and so different, you know. On the one hand, very intellectual. On the other hand, very down to earth and on the ground and relating to everybody at every level. That was something that I really learned very much from him. I mean, it was funny that when he interviewed me, he and there was one more gentleman who was the vice president at that time, they asked me a question. They said, because I was working, as you know, in Reader's Digest at that time, managing the Hindi edition. And they asked me, they said, have you ever sold anything? And I thought about it and I said, well, I've done marketing. I've done, you know, but actually going and selling like a salesperson or a branch manager or something like that. No, I hadn't actually done it. Mm-hmm. And yet they still said, no, we want you.
Okay.
Because they said, we want different talents within the organization. And I think that sort of opened my eyes that, you know, you can't just say that because a person is in a particular field or has a certain experience, he's the right person.
Correct.
What you have to look for is attitude.
Yeah.
And what you have to look for is the person's ambition. Correct. These are the two things, you know.
Correct.
If these are correct, then everything else. That's something I learned from him.
Okay. That's very well said. So that's an interesting segue to the next question, which is, what are the three words that define Ajay?
I would say innovation and creativity. I mean, because I am always looking for a different way to do something. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even though it sounds trite, hard work. Mm-hmm. Because without that, you can keep innovating or doing whatever you like. But if you're not ready to put in the labor for it, it doesn't happen.
Correct.
But I mean, when I was in college or university, somebody gave me a card which I always kept on my, looking at it. It said, do not follow where the path may lead. Mm-hmm. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail.
Wow. Well said.
So, I mean, that was the kind of motto that I carried, you know, that, okay, how can we do it differently? What should we do? What is another option? So that perhaps I would say is my.
Fantastic. So my next question to you is that, you know, if you were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
I think one thing I would do is I would create a bit more space for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what we call work-life balance. Because in this whole process in the corporate life, I think somewhere along the way, I must have sort of lost that work life. I mean, the good thing is that I had a wife and kids who understood, and they supported me like a rock, and they didn't sort of ever come in sort of create problems in that sense. Partly because my wife was doing her own thing, but still, I mean, that helped a lot.
Correct.
But I think I would have created more space. I should have created more space or more work-life balance. And when I see the young people who are working with me in the last 3, 4, 5 years, I could see how they used to fight to keep that balance. You know? And we guys coming from the boomers, as they call them,
correct,
don't really have that concept. You know, we kept thinking, oh no, you have to work hard. You know, I mean, what the hell is this? You have to if you put off the lights before 10 o'clock, there's something wrong, you know. That's the kind of thing. So I think I would think in terms of more work-life balance.
That's very well said. So Ajay, that brings us to the end of our chat. Thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. And I wish you lots of success in whatever you want to do in future.
Thanks, Ashutosh. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.